You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ahead this hour, we meet the mayor of Manitowoc on the western shores of Lake Michigan as we go around Wisconsin in a series of conversations with municipal leaders to get at the heart of local government issues. But first, as Wisconsin goes through a second winter of COVID-19, scientists know more about the virus, but the path of the pandemic remains uncertain. And this month saw the most people hospitalized with COVID in our state since the beginning of the pandemic. Vaccines were supposed to prevent that, but reluctance to take them and an ever-changing virus has prolonged the pandemic longer than nearly anyone expected. Shemaine Mills reports.
In October, Janine Combs went to the emergency room with her husband Douglas, who was having chest pain. Nearly an hour later, he was seen by a doctor. It would be 3 hours before he was admitted. The couple were told the Rock County Hospital was treating a lot of COVID-19 patients, and there weren't any beds immediately available.
It was absolutely heartbreaking watching him, you know, his face obviously in pain and being frustrated because he's not, you know, taking precedence over others who did not look that ill at all.
Combs survived, but like others, he was affected by COVID even though he never had the disease. Today, there are nearly twice as many hospitalized with COVID in Wisconsin as there were when Combs had his heart trouble. The Omicron variant of the virus is thought to be 4 times as transmissible as Delta, and Delta was twice as contagious as the virus's original strain. This month, Wisconsin repeatedly broke records for the most new infections per day. Many of those infections will turn out to be mild. But not all. For some Wisconsinites, it's created a sense of despair about the pandemic. Will it ever end?
If you plan to travel with liquid gels or aerosols in your carry-on bag, remember 311.
Over the holidays, thousands of airport travelers found themselves stranded or delayed when flights were canceled because of sick staff. More than 3.5 million Wisconsinites have gotten vaccinated against COVID. The busy holiday travel season was a sign that some people were back in pre-pandemic routines.
We appreciate your cooperation with the federal mask mandate. Once again, welcome aboard. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Shortly before the holidays, Tony Barkut of Fitchburg was having her 5-year-old daughter tested because she didn't feel well.
I think this year people are a slightly bit more relaxed, I think, because we all know I think at some point we're probably going to end up getting it. So I feel like it's a little bit more relaxed this year than last year, but that's just me.
Barkut is vaccinated. Others, like Jeffrey Horn, don't plan to get a shot. He's relying on natural immunity after getting a mild case of COVID in October of 2020.
I didn't take any ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. I just mean the kinds of things that they would tell you to do if you had a bad case of the flu. Keep yourself hydrated. I did take some vitamins, over-the-counter vitamins. I took a lot of rest.
Doctors warn that natural immunity is likely to wear off in a couple months and may not protect against new variants of the virus. Horn also doesn't go along with another piece of medical advice. He says he won't wear a mask. On a cold winter night, Horn was among those who packed a rural town hall to talk about Dane County's mask requirement. Supervisor Jeff Weigand said he wanted people to be able to publicly share how the indoor mask mandate has affected families, schools, and businesses.
COVID is real, and many of us have been impacted by it. All of us have been impacted by it. Some of us have gotten it. Some of our family members might have passed away. This is a real thing. But I'm not going to live in fear by a virus.
Amen. But with hospitals full and staff drained, Health Secretary Karen Timberlake says everyone who may need medical care is at risk. Not only those ill with COVID-19, but people like Douglas Combs who needed emergency attention.
The risk to our communities has never been more dire.
January showed us the pandemic's not over. In some ways, it was the worst month we've had. Officials say it's still too soon to tell whether the latest wave has peaked, and the last 2 years have shown just how hard it can be to predict what will happen next. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now to Manitowoc, our next stop meeting mayors from all over Wisconsin. It's home to about 34,600 residents as of the recent census figures. Grew by nearly 1,000 people over the decade since the 2010 census. founded in the 1830s, a rich maritime and shipbuilding heritage. How do you feel about Wisconsin's maritime capital, as they say? What speaks to you about the community? What challenges have you encountered with housing or workforce living in the area? 800-642-1234. Justin Nichols was first elected mayor of Manitowoc in 2009 at the age of 22, by the way, elected youngest mayor ever elected in the city, previously elected to the city's common council in 2005 when he was 18, still in high school. Mayor Nichols, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me, Kate. I appreciate it very much.
Well, just a nod to that introduction, which I'm sure you've heard before. As a youthful government leader, how did you get people to listen to you and follow your lead and not say, well, you're young and inexperienced and therefore you don't know?
You know, I can't say that it wasn't difficult, especially my first term when I was first elected. Fortunately, I was on the Common Council for 4 years prior to being mayor, so people at least knew who I was, employees knew who I was and where I stood on issues. But I've said time and time again that Manitowoc was really facing a critical moment. Miro Corporation had just left with thousands of jobs, which had been in our community for 100 years. The Manitowoc Company, our famed flagship company, left the community a couple of years after I was elected, thousands of jobs. We were really facing a critical moment, and I think Manitowoc realized that, you know what, maybe we can't do the same things we've done the last 100 years. You know, you just said on before, 150-year-old community. Maybe we need to think of things different. Maybe we need to focus on the younger generation, which was leaving in droves in Manitowoc for a generation. And you know, after a little while and preaching the message of this is what we need to do. You know, grandma and grandpa, if you want your grandkids to come back home, this is what we need to do. And, you know, now 13 years almost into this job, I think Manitowoc has really embraced that. And we've turned the corner and we are seeing a renaissance here.
To come back home, though, you need the workforce, you need the jobs. That has been a very much a volatile situation, a changing situation in the pandemic. What do you see there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, places like Manitowoc, which are the quintessential Midwestern city, where manufacturing is our bread and butter. You know, we have one of the largest foundries with Wisconsin Aluminum Foundry here. You know, those aren't the types of jobs necessarily that the younger generation went to college for, you know, went to get that four-year degree. So one of the things was looking at diversifying our workforce. Healthcare is a much larger industry now with two major healthcare networks in the community. Banking, we have a large banking presence with Bank First and Investors, which is now Nicolet. So we started trying to diversify that workforce, but manufacturing is still our bread and butter. And there's a lot of new industries manufacturing that are coming along, plastics. So we have Redline Plastics, which just added in our industrial park. We have Ammo Inc., which is a new company from Arizona that's building 150,000 square foot, 200 plus jobs. And we're starting to see a lot of our longtime businesses like Lakeside Foods, which has been in the community for over 100 years, continue to add and expand. They just did over a $50 million expansion here in the community not that long ago.
Well, I just want to jump in here for a moment because your industrial park, as I understand, is full. You mentioned Ammo Inc., that they make ammunition, broke ground on their factory in June last year. What is going on with your industrial park? And also with Ammo, what is the status of their factory being up and running? And are they still poised to create those 300 jobs?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, our industrial park is full. So thankfully, the Common Council has the foresight. We just purchased 90 more acres along Interstate 43 for expanded industrial growth. We're fortunate to be right on Interstate 43 in that regard. Yeah, Ammo Inc., they are on track. So they're building as we speak, and they are a company that is continually growing. They're continually doing more acquisitions, and those good-paying jobs, there's signs all around town that say, Ammo, we're starting at $25 an hour, which for Manitowoc After Manitowoc Company and Miro left, we saw those wages go down pretty drastically. They were the two companies that paid the in the 20s and into the 30s. Now we're starting to see all these other smaller companies with 100 plus jobs competing for some of the labor force and raising their wages to considerable amounts. So it's a good problem to have, I would say, than the alternative. But, you know, bodies and people are still what we need. And that's why our community is focusing very heavily on quality of life. That's why we're focusing on downtown. That's why we're focusing on the things that make Manitowoc unique. Because that is what we're finding the workforce is looking for. They don't just want a job. They want a life. They want a place to live, a place to raise their family, good education. And that's really what we're trying to focus on here in Manitowoc.
Manitowoc Mayor Justin Nichols explaining the issues he tackles in his community on the western shore of Lake Michigan. Do you live or vacation in Manitowoc? What do you think of the city, its developments? What concerns you about the changing climate that we'll talk about? Erosion, flooding, rising water levels. Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mayor Nichols here on the Ideas Network. We're meeting up with mayors from all over Wisconsin on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Today it is Manitowoc on the western shore of Lake Michigan, home of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum and the SS Badger car ferry, sails between Manitowoc and Ludington, Michigan, in balmier seasons, as in not now, I might add. Do you vacation in the area or have a business that caters to tourists? Have you been finding a workforce? Are you a remote worker who relocated to the area, maybe came home? 800-642-1234. Manitowoc Mayor Justin Nichols with us for about nine more minutes. Let's talk about environment. You are on the coast there, Lake Michigan, one of the 11 counties that form the coast of Lake Michigan. How are you responding to giant storms and rising water and erosion that is really a pervasive issue with climate change?
Yeah, it is becoming more and more prevalent in Manitowoc along our shore, especially for a lot of the assets that we have on our shore, like our wastewater plant, our trails that go between Manitowoc and Two Rivers. This last 3 years, we've seen a lot of shoreline erosion. The state has been very helpful in a lot of respects, especially a lot of damage that happened at the car ferry dock over the past few winters and with the shoreline erosion around the area with harbor assistance grants. The state's been very helpful. It's a big reason why mayors like myself and a lot of others from around the state were very supportive of President Biden's infrastructure bill that fortunately passed Congress and was signed by the president. We're looking forward to a lot of dollars for infrastructure to maintain our shorelines and to maintain all those assets that we have here in Manitowoc, because it's not cheap. And I can assure you that community the size of Manitowoc, 34,000 people, we can't afford really the major costs involved with the shoreline erosion.
And I see that tension there, that give and take, because being on Lake Michigan, that has immense value to you as a lakefront community. I mean, you've got the River Point District, but you also have the tensions with that, the risk because of the climate issues. And so you have to figure out how you navigate both those assets and those risks.
Absolutely. And also add in there, you know, we are a federal channel. Our river is a federal channel, which means we have huge 600, 700 foot ferries come in on a regular basis, especially in summer. So add that with the recreational value that we want to get out of our river. Obviously, someone doesn't want to be kayaking next to a 700 foot boat. But also, fortunately, we were also just designated as a National Marine Sanctuary, the newest National Marine Sanctuary in the nation. So right outside our shores, up to Two Rivers, Sheboygan and Port Washington is a designated national park, basically. With that comes a lot of federal resources, which partially is environmental. The assurance that the Great Lakes will remain clean, and this National Marine Sanctuary will bring a lot of federal resources to help that.
a little more there. What ways would a sanctuary status help with the issues that you're facing?
So a lot. So they're going to be bringing a lot of testing and environmental work that will be able to be brought to make sure that places like the wastewater plant are clean when we fill the lake back up. So especially with phosphorus now being a major issue and concern. Just that federal resource out there. They want to protect national parks. This is a national park.
We're in conversation with municipal leaders across Wisconsin, talking with Mayor Justin Nichols of Manitowoc. You can join in 800-642-1234. Joshua from Watertown called in, couldn't stay with us. And Joshua wonders about housing, lack of housing being a national issue. And we have heard this all over Wisconsin from mayors. If more jobs will come to your area, where do the workers live? Where do the people live? And how do you create the affordable housing?
That's absolutely a wonderful question because, as mentioned, every community is facing this now. We just went through a citywide housing study, which basically told us we need housing in every single aspect, whether it be market rate apartments, affordable housing, single units, and all the above. The good thing about Manitowoc is the cost to buy a home here is very reasonable. You can buy a very nice 2,000 square foot home, three bath, three bedroom for, $150,000, $200,000. The negative part about that is, especially with apartments and rents, to build the same building here as you would in Milwaukee, the cost of lumber is the same. But the cost of what you can get for rent in a market rate apartment is much different. So that's where we're starting to see the city of Manitowoc stepping up and putting money toward some of these projects. So we have an 87 unit apartment complex going up right now. The city was a partner through TIF dollars in that. We're working with an old mural building actually to do a 75 unit senior affordable housing complex where the city would step up and help kind of fill that gap of where rents are in Manitowoc and where the cost of just building a building at this point is. We're also talking about subdivisions and how the city can play a better role in assisting subdivisions being built instead of forcing the subdivision owners to build the roads, for example. Maybe it's a time where the city does that.
You mentioned TIF dollars. In all communities, they want a thriving downtown hub. And you started looking at revitalizing Manitowoc's downtown. You were backing it with some upfront tax increment financing, TIF district type dollars. What is the status of your downtown investments?
Well, so the city really was the leader kind of in a lot of that. We made a concerted effort to put serious dollars into downtown because and it's the heart of our community. It's really talking about that renaissance of Manitowoc. What are we going to become? We turned our face away from the water for too long, and we're turning back toward the water, the river, and the lake. So the city really was a lot of the upfront investment. And at this point, we're really starting to see the private sector step up in tremendous ways. There are buildings throughout downtown, scattered throughout downtown, that are being revitalized, renovated. The city is assisting with some of them with facade grants up to $50,000 in a grant for facade improvements. And there's just more excitement. There's more events. There's folks who are putting a lot of money, like the Wharf downtown, which is a new venue right on the river. Believe it or not, we never had a restaurant or bar on the river. Now we have a lot of those amenities, the wine bar and others. So we're starting to see a lot more private investment, which is, of course, the goal. We didn't want just the city to shoulder all these costs.
In our last moments together, you're president of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities. What are the conversations like among the league, and what is the league working on?
Everything we just talked about. Housing is a large one. For some of our smaller communities, EMS coverage is becoming a very major issue, especially for some of our rural communities and how they provide EMS services. We're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion throughout many communities, and where each community is at. And in those conversations, everyone's at a different place, but how can the league facilitate that? And especially, as always, you know, how can the state of Wisconsin help communities all across our state when we talk about shared revenue, when we talk about these large infrastructure dollars that are going to be coming to the state, funneled to communities? How can the league of municipalities play a large role in that, especially for some of our smaller communities who may not have the employees or the resources to go after a lot of these dollars? So it's an exciting time, really, because we're talking about infrastructure improvements throughout many of our communities. But it's also still with COVID and with housing crisis and workforce, still a very challenging time. But I appreciate you doing all these interviews with the mayors, because you're hearing the story from the ground, and we all go through it every day.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mayor Justin Nichols, Mayor of Manitowoc. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Producer Maureen McCollum brings us a poem about losing a loved one to COVID.
Pam Gustafson of Milwaukee loves to write poetry. It helps her process everything she reads and sees in her life.
I call it therapy, you know, because physically I am unable to cry due to an autoimmune disorder.
So when Gustafson's sister, Mary Beth Nolan, died from COVID complications last May, she couldn't cry about it. To grieve, Gustafson wrote a poem.
After her death, I went through a period where I was quite angry because there were so many people who refused to vaccinate. So that's when I wrote, "Dying from COVID is not pretty." It channeled my anger over my sister's horrible death.
Her sister was vaccinated, but she was immunocompromised. Gustafson sent her poem to us through WPR's Wisconsin Project with hopes more people could learn about her sister's experience.
Dying from COVID is not pretty. Dying from COVID is not gentle death. It is a brutal way to die, gasping for breath. I watched my baby sister die this way. She begged for a ventilator every day. She knew a ventilator signaled the end, but her fear and anxiety needed to mend. I saw fear in her eyes and tried to send messages of love to my sister, my friend. Her long hair was matted against her face. Her teeth were black with lots of dried gunk. She had to communicate by trying to write, refused to move her mask, aware of her plight. Imagine gasping for air just to talk. So much fatigue, you cannot walk. Like choking on a piece of food blocking air, or drowning your gasping lungs in despair. And living for weeks on tubes alone, what your body used to do on its own. A catheter to pee, you can't walk to the can. Tired, you can't lift your body for a bedpan. A tube that brings you some nourishment. Your body can't coordinate breath and eating. Now your lungs are deflated, balloons pleading for the air they were used to and needing. Two garden hoses sutured to your neck to remove carbon dioxide waste, to replenish oxygen, organs to baste. You can't move, there is no food to taste. Imagine writing a note to your sister. This is the last time you will see me. Even though it hadn't crossed my mind, the sight of her struggle was so unkind. She was right, it was the last time. But at that point, I still had hope. But my sister just could not cope, her lungs functioning at 0%. Doctors considered double lung transplant, but my sister wanted to end the struggle. She was constantly thinking, I just can't. I have been short of air for a long month. A And on that same note, she wrote to me, was a note to the people who gave her care. Can you put me under? Insert the tube. She was suffering, wanted to die, I conclude. For death was her only choice to end her pain. Then her kidneys shut down, her heart waned. They brought her back twice, but it was her will to escape her body, the one that COVID killed.
Pam Gustafson of Milwaukee shares a poem she wrote about her sister, Mary Beth Nolan, who died from COVID-19 complications. Gustafson read that poem at her sister's funeral. Nolan was 59, an educator, a wife, a mother of three, and a grandmother. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And now she is known as the KT girl, as in a quick trip superfan. Cassandra Berger has visited all 457 Wisconsin locations of the gas station convenience store chain last year. The La Crosse-based company recently opened its 800th store in Holman, Wisconsin, if you're counting. How many Quick Trips have you been to? Share your experience. Do you buy food at Quick Trip, or are you in their loyalty rewards program? I was just getting gas there a couple nights ago. I also picked up hot chocolate and a box of glazed donuts. Join in 800-642-1234. Cassandra Berger, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always excited to talk about Quick Trip.
I think we have gathered that. So in a single day, you went to 52 Quick Trip locations. I imagine that was a lot of driving, a lot of, I don't know what it was. What was that like?
Yeah, so that day, that was like the most number of Quick Trips that I hit in one day. And I decided, okay, I'm never going to hit 52 again in one day. That was a long day. But so I left like the Milwaukee area at like 7 a.m. and then didn't get home until like 12 or 13 hours later. So it was quite the trip, but it was worth it because I knocked a lot out. So, but would I do that again? Probably not.
So what would you do at each Quick Trip? Like, what was your visit like?
Yeah, so it totally depended on like the time of day. So obviously I would buy a lot of snacks there and food, but my favorite thing to do was talk with the employees or customers. But I would only do that if it wasn't super busy. I didn't want to take away from like their actual job. So, if it was a decent hour where there wasn't a bunch of people in there, then I love talking to the employees.
Why do you think the employees are so nice? I mean, they welcome you. They thank you for coming. They look forward to you coming back. I mean, and yes. they genuinely want to talk with you.
Yes. I think it all starts with their management based on what I've gathered. So like anytime I would talk to an employee, I'd be like, okay, what do you love about Quick Trip? What do you like about working here? Like, why do you stay? And it would always be like, oh my gosh, the management team treats us so well, or like, oh, it starts at the top, or leadership's great here. Like, it was always things along those lines. So, I mean, I really do think it's just, they have a great management style at Quick Trip.
Did you find variations from one to another, or did you see a lot of consistency along the way?
A lot of consistency, I would say. Like, products are always the same. But the main thing that was different was just like the size of the Quick Trip, or like what it looks like on the outside. And you could tell that some were built, you know, years ago, but then you could also notice like, okay, this one was probably built yesterday. So
So how did you decide to do this challenge? Because you're a head women's lacrosse coach at UW Lacrosse. So, this challenge was definitely not, you know, part of your job.
Correct. That's a great question. How did it start? Well, I've always been into videography and just like making random silly videos. And then in 2020, when COVID was kind of starting, that's when I really started doing videos based on like Quick Trip. And I, I wasn't really like thinking about it strategically. I wasn't like, okay, I'm going to start making these videos for Quick Trip. Like, it just kind of happened that that's what I was like most into at the time. And then Quick Trip started noticing the videos, shared one of them, and said like, meet my new best friend. And then I was like, oh my gosh, like, how do I stay involved with this company who is like thriving right now? And so then I presented the idea of this KT girl persona to their media team, and they jumped on board pretty quickly after I presented it. And so, yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
So you aren't a Quick Trip employee, and you said you consider yourself a paid influencer. So what does that entail? What does that mean?
Yeah. So I was on like a year contract this last year for the time that I was doing the visits. And so they supported me like with gas and like my hotel stays. If I had to stay somewhere, they'd give me apparel and gift cards and cash and just kind of whatever I needed to like support the journey.
Okay. And so what did you learn through this project? Like, what has it taught you?
I kind of already touched on it, but I mean, I had no idea that like the management and the leadership was so great at Quick Trip. Obviously I knew they were doing something right, but I didn't know like exactly what it was, but I really do feel like that's kind of what has helped them be so successful and sustainable. Just like their leadership from the top.
Well, great management. I mean, that you can say that, but that can mean many things. Did employees give you any specifics or any like aha moments to give insight into what is great management?
Yeah. So I know Quick Trip does like profit sharing with their employees at the end of the year, or I don't know if it's at the end of the year or when it is, but that's something that a lot of the employees talked about. So they like that part.
So they can kind of see that when their stores are thriving, they too will get a piece of those profits as profits go up.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So is there anything that makes a good Quick Trip location versus a one that needs improvements? You know, is there anything there that really puts one on top of another?
Let's see. That's a great question. Because I feel like everybody's not, I would typically say, oh, the people, like that makes a difference, but they're all great. Like I went to every store and they're all phenomenal. I would probably say like the size of the store. Like you can tell when it's like, I mean, all Quick Trips are so busy all the time. And so if it's a smaller Quick Trip, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I wish I had more space to like walk around. And but it's a good thing that they're so busy, but yeah, you can tell their newer stores are a lot bigger, better laid out. And so, I mean, that's kind of what they have going for them now.
We're talking with Quick Trip superfan Cassandra Berger. Head women's lacrosse coach, by the way, at UW Lacrosse, has made hundreds of stops at Quick Trip locations and has blogged about it, has been an influencer on it. What do you think sets this Wisconsin chain apart from others? What have you noticed about food selection over the years? What about the restrooms or the staff? How about I do not put restaurants and staff in the same sentence? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Cassandra Berger here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with Cassandra Berger, who has an affinity for Quick Trip, visited hundreds of the convenience stores last year. Lacrosse-based company has some 800 locations, founded in 1965. Cassandra with us for about five more minutes. Chris is joining us from Adams with a story. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I had a Quick Trip experience yesterday. I went to the grocery store and I realized when I got out that I had a flat tire. So I drove down to Quick Trip, which is just a couple blocks away, to use the air pump, and it wasn't working. So I went in the store and talked to the manager, and he came out, put on his coat, came out, and pumped up my tire for me and fixed the air pump above and beyond the call of duty.
Wow, I love it. I love it. Chris, thank you for sharing that. Laura is joining us from Lake Halley. Laura, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I am actually sitting in a Quick Trip parking lot right now. I just got my morning breakfast. I travel for my job, so a lot of the time I will only specifically stop at Quick Trips. Like, there could be a holiday, there could be a BP and I'll pass right on by, and I will specifically go to a Quick Trip. And it's the clean bathrooms. I know we had mentioned that before. And it's that I can pick up something really quick, and people are always friendly.
So what's breakfast?
I got two Bismarcks and a Diet Mountain Dew.
All right, Laura, thank you so much. Meeting people where they are at. Cassandra, what do you think of that? A manager putting air in the tires and, you know, our last caller, Laura, who will, you know, bypass others to go to Quick Trip.
Well, I'm not surprised that about the story with the manager putting ear in the tire. Like, I'm not surprised at all. Midwest nice. Love it. And then Laura, I totally relate to, because I will drive, you know, way out of the way to go to a Quick Trip.
Do you have any tips for using the Quick Trip Quick Rewards or their reward and loyalty program?
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel like the main tip is to just have a rewards card.
Radio. Did you have a question?
A lot of people don't have them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if you're going there every day, you should probably have one.
Yes. Yeah. So can the rewards card help you save at the pump?
Yes. Yep. That's what my reward is.
Okay. I see. All right. Well, let's go to Eric now in Stratford. Eric, hi. What are your thoughts? Oh, Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. What are your thoughts about Quick Trip?
I go there for gas just about every morning, and I feel that the Quick Trips are the problem in America. With the when you're standing in line, you're bombarded with the cakes and cookies and pies. Mm. When you get up to the desk, it's like they ask you any gas, but they also ask you, would you like a donuts today, anything like that. But I think this is leading to the obesity problem, type 2 diabetes problem in America.
Eric, very important point to bring up, too many sugary foods and quick foods. Your thoughts there, Cassandra?
Well, I think the good thing about Quick Trip is they have a lot of healthy options, right? Like they have the fruit, the veggies, like the whole foods. So there's definitely options, but yes, they definitely, they get you with those donuts at the end.
What are your goals, or do you have any types of strategy for your next thing that you want to accomplish that might be a bit outlandish?
Well, I would love to go to all of the Quick Trips and then the Quick Stars in Iowa at some point. But like we talked about earlier, I do have a full-time job. And so finding the time to kind of figure that out with my schedule is a process, but it's definitely a goal in mind and something that's on Quick Trip's radar as well.
Well, there's someone else, I think, who had 651 Quick Trip visits, a new London resident. So you have a goal there. You have to go to at least more than 600.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so how long did it take you then to go to all 457?
So the first day that I started my journey on like January 20th or something last year. So few weeks into the year. And then I went to my last stop in Holman, mid-December. So yeah, but I was basically done in like October.
Well, Cassandra, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Cassandra Berger, Quick Trip super fan, last year visited the gas station chains, 457 Wisconsin locations. Now, more than 10,000 people in Wisconsin have died from COVID, and this month's spike in infections saw more Wisconsinites hospitalized with the disease than at any time since the pandemic started. And this week, WPR is sharing stories of how the pandemic has been felt by Wisconsinites in their own words.
My name is Terry Erdman. I'm 56 years old. I live in the Pulaski area in northeast Wisconsin. I'm a public school teacher, so our entire career got blown up in March of 2020. Going to virtual was extremely taxing. The end of June, I picked up COVID, and I got real bad pneumonia. I was able to pull through that, and then about a month later, I kept having this pain in the top side of my heart, and we went to the long-haul clinic in Green Bay for COVID. And the doctor there, she ran EKG and she says, your right ventricle is not working correctly. So I was getting one good heartbeat then a pause of longer than normal. And then my heart would do almost looks like a double beat. And it was making me extremely lightheaded, very forgetful. And it was scary. If things don't improve greatly, they're going to throw a pacemaker in me. And some people have told me, no big deal. Pacemakers, I'm 56 years old. I really don't want to be connected to a battery the rest of my life. When you watch the news and you hear people saying that this is a hoax, this is just like the flu or the common cold, I'm like, yeah, for some people it is, and some people it's killing them.
I'm Cassandra Ambrosius. I live in Cornwinter with my husband and our 11-month-old baby. I had COVID in December of 2020. I came down with what I thought was just a head cold, kind of bad sinus blockage. And then New Year's Eve, I went to eat a muffin and I was like, this muffin is stale. I can't taste it. And immediately had complete loss of taste and smell. I have had no return of anything in more than 12 months now. So, like, I've never smelled my own child, right? Like, in this time on Earth, I don't know what he smells like. But I think my brain has created an association with what I think the baby smell is like. So when I am around him and I smell him or I give him a kiss, like, I can sense that. It's almost like my brain has created a new smell association. But it's not actually there. Of the long hauler symptoms, I'm glad I can breathe. I'm glad I can still exercise and don't get winded. You know, I'm glad I'm still here. So, of course, it could be worse, but I don't think anyone would be willing to lose their taste and smell.
She'eya Carol Dashajane. My name is Carol Schumacher. This is my Dene Navajo given name. I live in Sun Prairie. I'm originally from Arizona, off the Navajo Dene Reservation. Early April, my sister ended up in the hospital. After a week, she wasn't getting any better, and she got sent out because the small hospital on the reservation didn't know what to do. They weren't prepared for this virus. And then her son, my nephew, ended up getting sick. By late April, I had quite a few family members in the hospital. Like dominoes falling, it was just one after the other. In December of 2020, I lost 12 family members. It was three or four every weekend. We were putting them away, sending them off. No proper goodbyes, no proper service. Trying to raise money for the cost. Trying to understand this. Trying to process our losses. My niece passed away January 10th of this year. That's 27 family members that we lost. This past summer, it hit me really hard how much this virus has altered our lives. Each day, I have a name I hold. Gee, Sam, Amelia, Nez, Gloria, Smith. Herbert Benali. Oh, so much more.
Some people interviewed for this story shared their experiences with WPR's Wisconsin. WPR's series on the pandemic's effect on Wisconsin Nights continues tomorrow. Just ahead, we talk with three advocates about the progress of the nine-month investigation into Wisconsin clergy abuse. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.